Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMCortho.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMZ's live call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Dr. Andy Nawab, is an internist at Cardiology Associates of Schenectady and is director of Ellis Medicine's New Women in Heart Disease program, which provides affordable, comprehensive cardiac screenings for women to help them understand their risk. Dr. Nawab earned her medical degree in her native Pakistan and completed her residency at Blodgett Memorial Center in Michigan. She's certified by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Geriatrics. Dr. Nawab, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Andy, it's wonderful to see you here, to be part of today's conversation out there. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also check in with your questions and comments online at wamc.org/voxpop, on Facebook at facebook.com/wamcradio, or tweet us at WMCVoxPop. Or best of all, in my opinion, email us voxpop@wamc.org with your questions. So I understand the American College of Cardiology just came out with some new recommendations on cholesterol. What were they?
Yeah, so there is a little bit of a shift from the previous understanding of when to start treatment, what are the certain guidelines. Basically, this time it's been pooled into four categories. Patients who already have history of heart disease, they are put in one category. Then the second category are the patients who are diabetic, age between 40 to 75. The third category are the patients who have an LDL level of more than 190. Now, I want to just clarify for the audience what LDL is. It's the bad part of the cholesterol molecule that sort of plug up your coronary arteries and help into plaque formation, which is not a good combination to have in your bloodstream.
L is in lousy. That's how we remember.
Yes, right. Lousy. L is lousy. And then the fourth one is that if you have risk factors that are predisposing you to those plaque formation too. And those risk factors or risk calculators are based on your age, your blood pressure, your total cholesterol, and your smoking risk. So if you're at higher risk, that's the fourth category. Basically, this time, the American Heart Association basically removed the goals. They just said, if you are in pulling into one of those four categories, you just get treated with a high-dose statin. And by high dose, I mean they talked about Lipitor, one of the drug called atorvastatin, or simvastatin, which is generic also out there at 80 milligram dose. So these are called the high intensity cholesterol medications. And basically, if you're falling into one of those four categories, you just get treated. Everybody basically gets a 30% risk reduction. And so I take these guidelines with a grain of salt. I still think that we should individualize our approach. Family history is important. They didn't talk about that. C-reactive protein levels, which are the markers of inflammation that also now we feel that help in plaque formation. They didn't address that. They just basically said that if you have, you're putting into those four categories, you don't have to check cholesterol profiles anymore. There are no more goals. You just treat them with high-dose statin. And I think that to a certain extent, it's true. However, I think that the approach should still be individualized.
Well, what do we know that's negative about statins?
So, you know, there's so many things out there about statin. I must say that, you know, I always tell my patients when they ask me the question, I say over-the-counter Tylenol and ibuprofen is more dangerous for you than the statins are.
Really?
Because, you know, we talk about liver damage. I have hardly ever seen, I mean, yes, it's reported, it's about less than 5%, but to be honest, how many cases have I seen in my clinical practice with liver damage? None. Zero.
Interesting.
You do, about 5 to 15% of the patient do get myalgias from statin, but then there's different things.
What's
that
a myalgia?
Or the body aches or pain that patients describe. Mostly in females, males from the Asian, South Asian heritage. There are certain things like liver disease, kidney failure patients. They've complained more about these muscle aches and pains. But once again, you can deal with those by reducing the dose or recommended fish oil or some other form of oatmeal is great, you know, to add with the statin to help take you this medication. But by and large, these medications are safe. There was a huge thing about a couple of years ago about cognitive decline, like people getting dementia from these medications.
That's the one I worry about.
It's out of the window.
Really?
These particular guidelines that just came out, they have done a randomized control trials, and they have like almost 10 years of data. And there is nothing in the clinical trials indicating that these statins can cause cognitive decline.
We've had people call up here, I'm sorry, doctor, that say that they've cut their statin in half and that the result in terms of their numbers is the same. What have you heard about that?
Once again, and this is where these guidelines have come into play for these kind of patients.
Yeah.
They have said that when you put somebody on statin, your risk will be reduced 30%, all of them.
I see.
So you reduce or up the dose, it doesn't really matter. As long as you are reducing your LDLs by 30%, you're having some benefit. Now, how low is too low? Nobody knows that number. So,
but it's fascinating about the whole concept here of these numbers going down, because some people say that the statins do affect the numbers, but maybe not the heart disease.
True, but I think that, but we have, multiple clinical trials that showing that it indeed does reduce plaque formation.
The events.
It does reduce events, and even death rates related to cardiovascular. But the issue here is that what is the magic number? I don't think anybody knows that magic number. Lower is better. But we don't know how low we've got to go.
In terms of our numbers.
Exactly. And so that's why these current guidelines have removed the goals altogether. They just said, be attentive to these four categories. People who already have heart attacks and strokes. People who are diabetics, they need to be treated differently because they are very predisposed to plaque formation. Third are the ones who have really, really high doses of LDLs of 190. And number four, if you have tremendous amount of risk factors that predisposes you to heart disease, your risk will be reduced by 30%.
Now, some people say that we should be tested for inflammation, as you have said, but the inflammation test the last time I looked was expensive. I've had it, but do doctors now prescribe it?
Very good question, Alan. I mean, I do think that I have three favorite tests that I order.
Sure.
One is the high sensitivity C-reactive protein level.
Yeah.
I order it in women who have family history of coronary artery disease. Say, for example, a 45-year-old woman comes to my office who does not really have that much in terms of chest pain or shortness of breath. Her LDL is about 120 to 130. She said my mom actually, or dad died of a heart attack at age 40. So that's premature family history. And so in those patients, I do order a high sensitivity C-reactive protein because if it's elevated, it gives me the confidence level that I should indeed treat this woman more aggressively. And once again, with a statin. The second test that I really like is the homocysteine level. This is a test, again, a marker of inflammation. In patients who have no risk factors, means they're not smokers, they're not diabetics, but they're just having recurrent MIs despite them on medications, I would check that homocysteine level just for educational purpose to see if these are the kind of people who are more predisposed to it. And if they, and their studies have indicating that vitamin B12 and folic acid, if given in in a good amount, you would reduce the serum homocysteine level, therefore reduce the marker of inflammation, and therefore reduce the coronary events.
MI means?
Myocardial infarction or heart attacks.
Okay.
And then the third test that I like is the lipoprotein A level, and these are the ones who are my younger patients who have no other risk factors, but they have a terrible family history. And once again, this particular marker of inflammation is not affected by anything. It's just your genes. Some of them are just born with bad genes, and there's not a whole lot one can do other than, once again, lifestyle modifications.
And you think B12 actually helps prevent heart attacks?
In those particular subset of patients.
Interesting. Okay, listen, Dr. Andy, we're going to take a little break. We'll be right back with everybody's questions. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go.
Support comes from Kerry Haddad Gallery, Hudson, New York, presenting Modern Artists, an exhibit of contemporary, narrative, and humorous artwork through March 2nd. Open daily 11 to 5. KerryHaddadGallery.com. And NBT Bank, offering trust in fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com.
And we are back. Let us go to Tom in Troy. Thomas, you're on. What do you got?
Hi, a question for the doctor about AV block. I have the lowest degree of that. Just showed up on a routine EKG. And my understanding is that there's nothing that should be done about that. But I also read that they, can be caused by heart events. And I have had previous EKGs that didn't either didn't have this or it wasn't picked up on by my GP, and just wondering whether I should have any concern or there's anything I should be doing related to what might have caused that.
So Tom, it's sort of a broad question. So just for everybody in the audience, AV block means atrioventricular block. You have four chambers of your heart. The upper chambers are the atria, and the lower chambers are the ventricle. And this is, we are talking about an electrical conduction problem, not a muscle problem. There are actually three kinds of atrioventricular blocks. There is a type 1 block in which nothing needs to be done. Then there is a type 2 and type 3. Type 2 and type 3 blocks are basically dependent upon, they can just show up on your EKG. However, if you do not have any symptoms, you have nothing to worry about. And by symptoms, I mean is that you're becoming lightheaded or you're fainting. You definitely have something to worry about, and you need to see your GP again or your cardiologist again, because that means that there is a delay between your upper chambers and lower chambers, and those are the people who get pacemakers. Can I ask you, how old are you, Tom?
54.
54. So you're young.
It is type 1 that
okay. So you do not need to worry about it at all at this point. Type 1 blocks are not associated with heart attacks, but it's a very good question. There are two other kinds of blocks which are deeper into the ventricles, called the right bundle branch block and a left bundle branch block. And the left bundle branch blocks are associated with heart attacks. But yours is type 1, which is not associated with heart attacks. However, one needs to kind of keep a close monitor on your EKGs every few years, because maybe in your 70s, you will progress into a type 2 and type 3 and have symptoms and may even need a pacemaker. But nothing to worry about right now.
Tom, we got to let you
go.
Thanks a lot. Bye. Okay. That frees up one free phone, if you believe that or not. Let's go to Paul in North Adams. Okay, Paul, you go.
All right, thank you. I'm on disability, and I have cervical degenerative disc disease. And several years ago, I was in the shower, and I was doing exercises that my doctor had suggested, and my whole right side went numb. And since then, they kind of told me I had a pinched nerve. And I wonder, how do you tell the difference between a stroke and a pinched nerve?
I'm not an authority on that, but I can try to answer your question. Basically, degenerative disc disease in your spine, you can diagnose by doing an MRI of your spine, and stroke is more to do with your head, basically. Strokes usually will have other problems if your whole right side is going numb. I mean, they would have problems with speech. You may have a paralysis on one side of your face. And strokes, usually what we call as TIAs or the early strokes, usually if that thing is there, it should go away. You know, it shouldn't persist. If it persists, then you're in trouble. So thinking that what you're describing to me sound more of a pinched nerve than a stroke.
Well, that's what they said it was, but they also said if it ever happens again, run to the hospital.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, if you are having other symptoms, like for example, you're having a paralysis on your one side of your face more than the other, or you are having speech problems or clumsiness more than the other side. I mean, these are all the signs and symptoms of strokes, and for those, you do rush to the hospital.
Paul, great question. Thank you. We're going to try to move on and get everybody in. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Let's go to Elizabeth. Elizabeth in Glenmont. Elizabeth, you're on.
More than the other side. I mean, these are all...
Elizabeth, turn off the radio.
For those, you do rush to the hospital. Paul, great question.
Elizabeth.
We're trying to move on and get everybody in. Thank you.
Okay, Elizabeth Blewett. Okay, let's go to Sue in Troy. Now, there are three open lines. Sue, you're on. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Doctor, I'm 70 years old. I have heart disease. I'm on Lipitor, small dosage, because I couldn't take the higher one, and several other beta blocker. But my question, and now I am on a reverse heart disease diet that I've been on for approximately 9 months.
Okay.
And feel very good. But I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that. It's the Esselstyn diet, the one that Bill Clinton's on, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that in terms of reversing heart disease?
I am of a true believer that lifestyle modifications are very important, in reversing of your heart disease, more than the medications, I would say. So even if you have heart disease, lifestyle modification at any age of your life is good. The particular diet in question is basically, is that by and large, what I tell my patient is that, without going into specifics of certain diets, is that you need to have more whole grains in your diet, more fish in your diet, more vegetables in your diet, have less polyunsaturated fats in your diet, and reduce the amount of carbohydrates. You know, simple sugars like candy and juices and breads, all of them are just, make your sugar levels go up, which in turn cause a lot of inflammatory changes in your blood vessels, and therefore predisposes those arteries to get more injured and have more plaque formation. So, I'm happy that you're on it and feel good about it. And for everyone out there, lifestyle modifications are the key.
And
okay.
I'm fascinated by the carbohydrate issue.
Yeah.
There are complex carbohydrates, which are not as bad as,
right.
some of the simple carbohydrates. Yeah.
And this diet, you eat a lot of complex carbohydrates,
right.
because you're eating a lot of beans
That's
and
right.
rice. But it's all whole grains.
That's right,
right?
Whole grains. Because
but
you don't want
to. Fish.
No fish.
Nothing with a face or a mother.
Okay, hey, Sue.
And no oil.
I'm so sorry to do this to you. I'm going to let you go so that we can get everybody in. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Got a couple of free phones. Use them now. Get online. Let's talk to our old friend, Don in Great Barrington. Don?
Hello, doctors. All things elf. Being positive, is there any reason not to put a man's heart into a woman or vice versa, please?
You know, I, I don't have that much experience in heart transplant surgeries, but by and large, you would think that the woman's heart should go into the woman's body and men's should be going into the man's body because of just the way the heart is structured. The heart, you know, it.
There are differences,
heart,
right?
Yeah. I mean, a woman's heart, I mean, a woman's body is smaller than the man's body. So, and their arteries are more smaller than the men's arteries. So you would think that there is a gender difference, but I am not an authority to talk in detail about heart transplant surgery.
Thank you very much.
No
Thanks,
problem.
Don. Bye. Okay. Your chances of getting in right now are excellent. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Lisa in Albany. Okay, Lisa, bring it.
Yes, hi. I had a quick question for the doctor. My dad had a heart attack in 2009, and he had a mitral valve replaced with a cowl valve.
Okay.
And also he was put on a pacemaker. My question was, how long would these valves last, and would he have to have a new valve replaced in a few years from now?
Very good question. The cowl valve usually, and then once again, you know, don't, you know, some people valves survive more than the others, but I give about 10 years. 10 years for the cowl, and that's why, and mechanical valve is for life, but then you have to take Coumadin or blood thinners for the rest of your life.
Right.
But cowl valve, about 10 years. Some I have seen even go up to 15 years and have no problems. But by and large, between 10 and 15 years, you will need another valve.
What about pig?
Pig, cow, they're all, I mean, they're just the same. They're non-mechanical. Mechanical is what you don't need replacement. But then you have to be on lifelong Coumadin, whereas cow or pig
Which
valve,
Coumadin is a blood thinner.
It is a blood thinner, yeah. And a lot of people, if you're younger in age, a lot of people don't want to like the idea of being on lifelong blood thinners because, I mean, you have a long life. Other things can happen to you. You may get cancer. You may get other things for surgeries. And so a lot of people don't like to be on lifelong blood thinners. So,
Lisa, thank you for the call.
Can I just ask one
question? Sure.
Sure.
I know that he had open heart surgery,
yes.
But now these procedures are being done through the arm perfusion. That will be the future.
For future, yeah, you're right. Mitral valve, there are surgeries that are being done through the arms, but it's still in the developing process. I know a surgeon in Boston who has been doing it. We have become better with the aortic valve. I know that's being done very commonly in Albany when you have an aortic valve replacement. Mitral valve is still sort of a tricky because the way it's placed, but more techniques are coming out, and I bet in the next 10 years or so we will have more advances.
And what does the mitral valve, Dr. Andy, what does the mitral valve do?
So basically, there's two kinds of valves. The mitral valve is sitting on the right side of your heart, and aortic valve is sitting on the left side of your heart. Mitral valve is just shunting the blood flow, receiving the blood flow into the right side of the heart, and that's the valve sort of responsible sending the blood towards your lungs as well, whereas the left side is basically sending the blood to the rest of your body. It's a little bit in a tricky spot, the mitral valve, as compared to the aortic valve. So that's why she needed a pacemaker and everything else.
Lisa, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Tom in Gilderland. Tom, you're on.
Yeah, hi, how you doing?
Very good.
Doctor, a quick question. My LDLs are good, my HDLs are good, the cholesterol's about 90.
Okay.
And I'm up there in years, and they got me taking 10 milligrams of Crestor, 1,000 milligrams of niacin, only because about 8 years ago they did a scan on my neck, and they said that it was blocked. There were some blockages in there.
Have you had that scan rechecked again?
No, I had it, like I said, the last time it was done was probably about, I'll say maybe 6 years ago.
Yeah, maybe time to recheck those plaques again. I mean, you don't have heart attack. Are you a diabetic?
No, I have no problems whatsoever.
And no
blood pressure medicine. The only thing I take is that Crestor.
So, I mean, maybe it's just time to do the lifestyle modification and get you off the statins if you do not have any more plaques in your neck arteries. I just don't know what your ultrasound at that point showed. I mean, if you had a plaque or a cholesterol molecule plugging up your neck veins more than 50%, then taking a cholesterol medication is a good idea, because then you will reduce the risk of having more thicker plaque formation in your neck, which will reduce you to have future strokes. However,
yeah, I don't need that.
That's right. But if
how long does it take? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm saying that if you recheck your scans and the scans look pretty good and clean, then there is no need for you to be on statins if everything is good.
One last thing. How long does it take for that plaque to build? Say the plaque was 50% in the neck. How long does it take for that to drop?
In the next, if you are not a smoker, if you're not a diabetic, if you live a healthy lifestyle, those plaques should have resolved in the next 1 to 2 years after taking a cholesterol medication.
Oh, that's great. I really appreciate your advice. Thank you very much.
Tom, thanks for calling.
You bet.
All right. Let's go to Linda in Cambridge. Linda, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, I have no risk factors.
Okay.
I'm 67. And my total cholesterol was 243. However, the HDL was 67. Do I need to worry?
No,
because
you don't.
My husband's on, plaque medicine, statin medicine. His total was like 120, you know, so...
So,
what do you say with people with a high HDL?
Yeah, and you know, the recent guidelines we were just talking, maybe you have joined the show a little bit later. I was talking to Alan about the recent cholesterol guidelines that just came out on November of 2013 that addresses patients like yours. So basically, if you do not have heart disease, if you're not a diabetic, if you do not have risk factors like having high blood pressure, if you are a smoker, a negative family history of heart disease, and you do have a good cholesterol level, you do not need to be on statin.
And the HDL, how high, what is the right, what is about
for,
the right?
So for females, more than 60 is a good number, and for males, more than 55 is also a good number.
Okay. Thank you, Linda. Let's go to Sharon in Schenectady. Sharon, you're on.
Hi, thank you. The doctor had mentioned earlier about the right and left bundle branch blocks differences, and I was diagnosed with the right. So I was concerned as to, someone else did tell me that the left was more of a concern, but what is the problem with the right, if any, and is there any thing I need to do about that?
As once again, you know, right bundle branch block can just sort of appear. It's just your conduction system or electrical system. You do not need to worry about it unless and until you have symptoms like, you know, lightheadedness, or if you're passing out, then you still have to worry about with the right bundle too. But the previous gentleman asked the question if one of the bundle branch blocks, which one was related to heart disease, and I said that the left bundle is more common with having heart problems. But if you have risk factors, like if you are a smoker, if you have high blood pressure, if you have high cholesterol, if you had a family history of heart disease and suddenly a right bundle branch block appeared on your EKG, there is no harm in being referred to a cardiologist and having a nuclear stress test done.
Okay, because when they discovered it on my routine EKG, I'm 54, I had for a pre-op outpatient surgery. They told me I didn't need to see a cardiologist and it shouldn't be a problem, but I'm not having symptoms that I know of. What would be the symptoms? Lightheadedness,
dizziness, or if you're passing out for no reason.
Okay. What about like palpitations or irregular rate? Would that cause an irregular rate or...
Yeah, and I mean, an irregular heartbeat or called atrial fibrillation sometimes can be associated with the right bundle branch block. So it is a possibility that maybe you had an episode, and then when you went back into your normal rhythm, that the right bundle branch just appeared on your EKG. So it's sort of hard to say, but if you're not having any symptoms, I don't think you need to worry about it too much.
Okay.
Sharon, thanks for the call.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're going to take a very short break. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Just everybody, Bill and Ed and Eve and Kate, stay where you are.
Support comes from Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. Ashokancenter.org. Premier Medical Group, gastroenterology, urology, internal medicine, endocrinology, geriatrics, nephrology, and pulmonology with offices throughout the Hudson Valley. PremierMedicalHV.com. And Marriott TownePlace Suites, Albany Downtown, offering studio, one- and two-bedroom suites with fully equipped kitchens. Amenities include indoor pool, breakfast, local transportation, Wi-Fi, and parking. TPSAlbany.com for reservations.
And we are back, we are delighted to have Dr. Andy Nawab with us. Okay, so let me ask you this. Let's go to number five, Bill in Beacon. Okay, Bill, you're on.
Thanks. I was wondering what you think, as a specialist, are the most common or most important mistakes that a primary care provider could make in terms of heart issues.
Bill, you're going to get me in trouble here.
if you could talk to them and say you could improve by doing this or whatever.
I think the most common mistakes would be, I think as patients and as physicians, we just have to be more in tuned in listening a little more carefully to our patients, take more detailed history, giving a little bit of a thought in getting a good physical exam. I'm from that old school that history and physical exam, those two things are the key to a lot of doors.
Yeah.
And so when a person tells me that, he has family history or he's a smoker, he may be a little bit overweight, his cholesterol may not be to the goal, and then if they are complaining of symptoms, you gotta, listen carefully, especially in women where women do not present similar to men. There are a lot of unusual symptoms that women can present, like unusual fatigue, lightheadedness, dizziness, and they may be having an anginal equivalent, not having a typical chest pressure-like symptom. So you have to be very careful when you listen to people and be careful with your physical exam and then direct your blood work and your treatment goals according to that.
Great,
so listening carefully.
Yeah.
Bill? Okay. Anything specific? Otherwise, we're going to let you go.
No, that's all. Thanks a lot,
Bill. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Let's go to Eve in Rexford. Eve in Rexford, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for doing this. I have a question about cholesterol. I'm sorry I missed the very beginning of the program. I think you might have talked about it. My cholesterol generally is quite high. When I'm unmedicated, it's between 330 and 350.
Wow.
Or even 360. But my HDL runs between 75 and 90. I have no family risk factors. My mother had a little angina at the end of her life, but both my parents died of cancer. And I exercise every day. I don't eat anything white, et cetera.
Do you have high blood pressure?
No, my blood pressure is actually a little on the low side usually, maybe 115 over 70 generally. And I've tried every kind of diet, and it never budges. The cholesterol maybe drops at 5 points.
Your bad cholesterol, I mean, I know you told me your total cholesterol is about 330.
Oh.
Your bad, your LDL, do you remember the...
The LDL, if it was 330, it was about 230.
Yeah, we were just talking to Alan, maybe you missed the early part of the show. These are the kind of people that basically are recommended to go on statins.
But every time I've taken statins, I work out every day and I get pain all over my body and I can't stand it.
Yeah, so there is some things that you can do. So the statin selection is important in you. the atorvastatin, Lipitor, simvastatin may not be the drug for you.
I've tried all three of those.
Exactly. You have to go to more hydrophilic statins, for example, pravastatin, Lescol, or Crestor, or rovastatin.
Pravastatin. I've already tried that one, too.
Okay. And have you tried Crestor?
Crestor.
Crestor is a long-acting hydrophilic statin, and sometimes what I do for my patients is that I don't put them on statin every day. I put them on 2 days a week or three days a week, and then I put them on fish oil, Q10, coenzyme Q10, and I recommend oatmeal for you every day, whether you hate it or not. You gotta have
to eat it.
Or you just have to pinch your nose and eat it.
I like it. I like it, and I put an egg white on top of it.
That's right.
Put an egg on it.
Yeah, it's good.
And if it can bring your cholesterol down, even down, I always think that something is better than nothing. And so if it can, your LDL is 230, if it can bring it down even up to 160, it's still pretty good. You know, so I always believe in something is always better than nothing. It will still reduce your cardiac risk factors to at least 15 to 20%, which is very good. So if you're not able to tolerate it, talk to your doctor about Crestor. And Crestor maybe 2 to 3 days a week in combination with, you know, the dietary stuff that we just talked about and fish oil. And that should help.
Okay.
A little bit, yeah.
All right.
Okay, Eve, thanks for the great call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yep. And we'll go to Kate in... No, we won't. We'll go to Ed in Greenfield. Ed, you're on.
Hi, thanks, guys. Doctor, my problem seems... I do have some high blood pressure, but my main problem my whole life has been high triglycerides.
Okay.
And I do have family history of heart disease, and I know my father had high triglycerides. I do have an older sibling and a younger sister who also have had heart attacks, and I don't seem to have any symptoms at all, but my triglycerides always seems to be tough. No matter what I do, I can't get them down. Is there anything you can recommend?
Yeah, and so this was one of the limitations of these recent guidelines that I disagree with, because they did not talk about the high triglycerides. But in my mind, high triglycerides are definitely a risk factor for developing diabetes, it is also a risk factor for our abdominal obesity. Some people are kind of slim, but they carry their weight into their bellies. And these are the ones who have increased marker of inflammations. These are the kind of people that I also check the high sensitivity C-reactive protein levels to. And then I go aggressively about it, because if you have borderline diabetes, truncal obesity, high triglyceride level, you're pretty much in that category of metabolic syndrome. And those people are definitely at increased risk of cardiovascular events. The medication that I like among the statins are Crestor, because it helps with the triglycerides and total cholesterol and LDL. And then a combination of fibrate, like Tricor, one of the fibrate medication in combination with a statin, the two drug combination with some fish oil would be beneficial for you.
Okay. Any dietary recommendations?
Yeah. I mean, I think that breads that we talked about, simple sugar, a lot of people thinking that, you know, if you're drinking a lot of orange juice, that's very good for you. Juices, in my opinion, are not good for you. They just increase a lot of blood sugar levels and can actually cause increase in triglyceride levels. So reducing breads, fruit juices, simple sugars, chocolate, candy, things like that, are all bagels. All of them are going to, if you're going to reduce those, they're going to reduce your triglyceride levels.
And what about a couple of just oranges every day?
No, a couple of oranges are fine. But you know how store-bought orange juice is,
like
with the American Heart Association label, beneficial for your health, prevents your heart attack.
Nonsense.
That's like nonsense. That's
sure.
Right.
Sure. Ed, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And we're going to go now to Kate in Albany. I see what you're doing, Colleen. Okay, Kate in Albany, you're up.
Hi. Hi. I'm sitting here wondering if maybe my question is more of a relationship question than a medical question.
Okay.
But here
affairs, affairs of the heart.
Affairs of the heart.
Well, my husband, who is 45 years old, just had a physical 2 years ago, and his primary care doctor told him that his cholesterol was borderline high. It's 200.
Okay.
So he recommended that he make some dietary changes.
Okay.
I have been a vegetarian for the past 5 years. The problem is he works out of town 4 days a week. So when he's with me, I know he's eating the right things because I'm preparing his meal for him. But when he's out of town, I know he's not eating right. My question is, what I'm doing, is it enough to help keep him in out of trouble with his cholesterol, or does he really need to do more on his end when I'm not involved?
How long is he away from you during the week? Just 2 days?
4 days.
4 days.
4 days.
4 out of the 7, yes.
So I'm thinking that he's more away from you than with you.
Yes,
so,
right.
So, I mean, I still
I
think that
some,
I know. Something is always better than nothing. But
okay.
I think that, you know, packing some good snacks with him, like non-salted almonds, you know, raisins, you know, nuts, fruits, having to tell him to maybe use some vegetables, you know, just having to pack some snacks with him that are healthy and will reduce his eating in the other department may be helpful for him, too.
And what do you give him, Kate, when he's at home in the vegetarian selections?
Well, I eat salad all the time. I love salad.
Yeah,
so I have a rainbow of colors in my bowl. And if he needs, you know, I will make him a fish fillet that's baked. Or he likes salmon, so maybe once every couple of weeks I'll give him a salmon or chicken. But I haven't bought red meat in months, and I just refuse to have it in the house, so therefore he's not tempted to make me cook it for
way to,
him.
Way to go, Kate. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Okay, let's go to Beth in Delmar. Beth, you're on. Hi, Beth.
Oh, Beth. Thank you for doing this. I was diagnosed with cardiac myopathy.
Yes.
And although I have a certain high blood pressure, but not really that high, don't have really any other risk factors except for age. The cardiologist had said open heart surgery is a possibility, but not for me because of my age.
How old
and
are you again?
I just wondered how else you deal with that. I have no shortness of breath or anything like that.
How old are you, Beth?
At 78.
So just for the audience to know and for you to know, there's two kinds of cardiac myopathy. There is ischemic, which means that you have a weakened heart muscle because there's blockages in your heart arteries. And then you have a second kind of myopathy, which is called non-ischemic, which means that your coronary arteries are clean. You just have a weakened heart muscle because of a viral infection or a cause unknown, basically.
I think that's what I have.
So you
call that idiopathic.
Idiopathic.
Don't we?
Idiopathic, yeah. Viral,
yeah.
Non-ischemic, dilated cardiomyopathy. Surgery is not the way to go for that. There are certain very good medications out there that helps the squeeze of your heart if you consult your cardiologist. If it is a certain number, means that if your squeeze of your heart is less than 30%, that you may be a candidate to get a defibrillator, which is to prevent you from having bad sort of rhythm problems that arises when your heart dilates. But if you don't have any symptoms of shortness of breath or heart failure, then at the moment, nothing to worry about. Only word of caution that I will give to you is that be careful with salt in your diet. People who have cardiomyopathy, they cannot tolerate a lot of salt. You will be in trouble. You'll be in heart failure if you take too much salt. 2 grams of salt, less than 2 grams of salt a day.
Beth, thanks for the call. Trying to get everybody in.
The problem I have is when I, if I go up, like if I ascend like a hill or something, I do notice
Sure.
That I can't do it that easily.
Sure, and that is to be expected.
Yeah.
Thank you, Beth.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and let's go to Joe in Rotterdam. Joe, you're on.
Hi, doctor. I've been listening to your program, and I haven't heard you mention aspirin therapy. Do you recommend that for your patients?
Aspirin, about 2 years ago, guidelines came out that routine use of aspirin is actually harmful. So you need to use aspirin the right way, because aspirin can cause you to have increased stomach bleeding. But if you are of a certain age more than 75, if you are a female more than 75 years of age who has irregular heartbeat called atrial fibrillation, or you have diabetes, or you already have coronary artery disease, or have tremendous risk factors for heart disease, aspirin is beneficial. But I do not recommend routine use of aspirin in my younger patients with no risk factors.
So even
is that baby aspirin or regular aspirin?
Baby aspirin is fine. Baby aspirin is fine. Actually, more and more studies have come out. In fact, even the people who have heart disease who are getting stents, studies have indicated that baby aspirin is just enough. Too much aspirin is not good for you.
And a follow-up on aspirin, if you're having a heart attack, should you take an aspirin?
Oh, yes, right away. As soon as if you think that you're having chest pain that is suggestive of angina, aspirin is the gold therapy.
And
take
what does it do?
Right away.
What does it do?
It basically helps. You're basically, when you're having a heart attack, your platelets are very active and they're sticky. And the aspirin basically make them less sticky, and as a result, get that plaque moving.
Now, they sell in the drugstores now pre-crushed aspirin that you can carry in a little tiny packet that they come in. Is that a good idea to have those?
I don't recommend routine use because it does cause increased risk of GI bleeding.
Sure.
And we have a lot of those patients who get admitted to the hospital. But in the right kind of patient population, aspirin is very beneficial.
Joe, great call. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Let's go to David in Woodstock. David, you're on.
Hi, doctor. I was a little surprised to hear you mention Tylenol and ibuprofen in the same breath as being damaging to the liver. I've always thought that Tylenol was very toxic to the liver. And in fact, for every doctor I see, I'm telling them I'm allergic to Tylenol. But I've been taking ibuprofen for years. I've never had any indication of my liver panels being in any way off.
So ibuprofen and Tylenol more than ibuprofen, but both of them can cause a lot of liver damage. Ibuprofen, actually, if taken a lot of it, can actually, in the right sort of subset of patients, can cause water retention, increase in blood pressure, can predispose to you for you to have heart failure. So ibuprofen is not that benign of a medication. However, if you're taking it in the recommended dose, for example, the store-bought Advils are 200 milligrams. Even if you take 400 milligrams three times a day, that's not a problem. But here are some patients who take 8, 10, 12 ibuprofens a day. That's
No.
Yeah.
I know one who works right here.
Yeah. It causes increase in stomach bleeding, causes kidney problems, cause you to have heart failure, cause you to have high blood pressure, because it's tied to a sodium molecule and it causes a lot of water retention. We have a lot of patients who come in with swollen legs who use a lot of ibuprofen. So you've got to be careful with ibuprofen and Tylenol, both of them, not to take them like vitamin pills, because they're not vitamins.
David, I'm going to let you go. I want to go.
Okay, thank you.
One more guy I want to get in. And that is, Bob in Saratoga. Hey, Bob, you can only ask the question because we're almost out of time. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm taking a couple generics for cholesterol, Zocor, and the other one is
Atorvastatin. Yes.
And I'm also taking something for prostate, Tamulosin.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a generic.
That's
okay, what's the question?
Well, the question is, is there a disadvantage to me taking these? So far, I haven't had a history of heart attack. I'm about 66, and mostly people in my family have had strokes.
Well, you still, you know, stroke and heart attacks are pretty much in the same category. Basically, that indicates that, you know, your family had plaque in their brain and they had a stroke. So, no, I mean, taking these medications, if you are asking me the questions that all three of them, if they have like interaction between them or if it's harmful for you, no. If you have high cholesterol and have risk factors, that should not be
a
problem.
And that has to be it. Excuse me, I'm so sorry for cutting you off, but we are out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in, apologize to those who were left on the line, well, almost left on the line like Bob. I'd also like to thank Dr. Andy Nawab for joining us today. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell, our super volunteer. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for some music and a news update.